Welcome to Cryptozoology with Dr. Daisy. I'm Dr. Daisy Fiore, and I research, write, and read everything you hear on this podcast. I hold a PhD in anthrozoology, an MA in anthropology, and a long fascination with the world's lost and undiscovered creatures. So join me on a journey to explore what may be lurking in the corners of this fascinating place we call planet Earth. For this episode, I really wanted to go aquatic. Maybe talk about Champ or Nessie or the Lusca. But then a certain movie trailer came out, so now we're talking about mermaids. Now, just to be clear, mermaids don't exist. There really isn't any possibility of that. And yet, despite the complete impossibility of aquatic, water-breathing humanoids living and talking underwater, there have been legends about mermaids for a very long time. Some of these legends are simply fascinating. So let's dive in. Excuse the fish pun. The first part man, part fish images date back all the way to ancient Mesopotamia, about 5000 BC. Images of the god known as Ea, or Enki in the Sumerian, depict a part man, part goat, part fish sort of guy. Ea was the god of water. Sort of. He was also the god of fertility, and there are some pretty interesting images associated with him that we won't go into here. He wasn't really thought of as a mermaid, though. Perhaps the first true mermaid was Atargatis, an Assyrian goddess from about 1000 BC. Atargatis is said to have fallen in love with a human shepherd and had a daughter with him, but she accidentally killed her human lover. In her grief, she cast herself into a lake. But she couldn't die or transform fully into a fish, so she kept her godly beauty from the waist up and became a fish from the waist down, thus becoming the first mermaid, and perhaps the legend upon which all other mermaids are based. Temples to her in Israel contain pools of fish, and devotees associated her worship with the water, the moon, and fertility. Now the Greeks really got the whole mermaid thing going. They believed in sea nymphs called the Nereids. They were sometimes portrayed as just people with legs, but were more often portrayed as half-human, half-fish. There were 50 of them, and some of them got pretty famous. The Nereid Thetis was the mother of Achilles. The Nereid Amphitrite married Poseidon, and together they had a son named Triton, who is a true merman and canonically the father of Ariel in The Little Mermaid. As Greek gods do, Triton had a bunch of kiddos, and now I think we're to believe that the Mediterranean was just messy with merpeople. Now, one of the most famous stories we associate with mermaids is that of Odysseus. In Homer's epic saga, Odysseus wants to hear the call of the sirens, so he ties himself to his mast to hear their beautiful song, while his crew stuffs their ears with wax so they aren't tempted. In modern tellings and paintings, the sirens are usually portrayed as mermaids. That wasn't really the original form of the sirens, though. In the original form, sirens were part woman, part bird. They sometimes had wings and scaly legs. Their transformation into the mermaids we now think of was gradual and had a lot to do with the Romans, who told a story of them losing a singing contest to the muses and thus losing their wings. But mermaids is definitely not what Homer had in mind. The Romans also made them beautiful and seductive, and thus they became synonymous with mermaids and what we think of today. Another legend from the Mediterranean is that of Thessalonike, sister of Alexander the Great. She became immortal when Alexander washed her hair with water from the Fountain of Immortality. When Alexander died, she flung herself into the sea to try to kill herself. Since she could not, she transformed into a mermaid and roamed the sea for centuries. She could apparently transform into a monster and destroy ships who failed to comfort her by lying and saying that Alexander was alive and well. Mermaid legends are not confined to the Mediterranean, but are found all over the world. In Scotland, there are legends of selkies. These are often described as seals that can shed their skin and transform into humans. There is a folk tale that if a man steals a selkie skin, He can convince her to marry him, but she will always be sad and long for the sea. And if she finds her skin, she will immediately abandon him. The seal wife story is also found in Scandinavia and Ireland. Though not a true mermaid, it does have some parallels. In most British folklore, mermaids are ominous figures that foretell bad weather or ill luck. There are many folktales about them telling sailors they are doomed or lying about shore being near when it is not. The oldest depiction of a mermaid in Britain is from about 1078 on a bench end in a Norman chapel. Scandinavian mermaids are a little more ambiguous. They can be good or bad. They are often associated with prophecy. They may abduct maidens, foretell storms, tell the future, or drag sailors to their deaths. But folklore about human-fish hybrids can be found further east as well. Chinese mythology tells of the Dai people, a merfolk race with its own nation. Korea has the tale of Princess Wang-ok from Naranda, who rules a kingdom of mer people. Japan has the Ningoya, a fish with a human head whose flesh gives longevity to anyone who eats it. The tales go on. But where do these tales come from? Are they the product of overactive imaginations? Are they based in real animals? A very popular proposal for an animal that could look human-like underwater is the order Sirenia. This order of animals includes the manatees and dugongs. Seeing these animals up close, it seems almost laughable they could be mistaken for beautiful women. They are large, round, and blubbery, with squat heads made for chewing up seagrasses. Side note, I love them. However, underwater, they move quite gracefully. They have large paddle-like tails, two front flippers, and the general shape of a head. I've even seen manatees use their front flippers to hold food to facilitate eating. So a quick glimpse of one swimming could look a little human-like. Today, many scientists take it as fact that the order Sirenia is the inspiration for mermaids. I see only one little problem with that. These animals are usually in coastal or riverine areas. They're not found in the open ocean, which is where a lot of mermaid legends come from. There are, of course, plenty of other animals that could inspire mermaids. The beluga whale, with its ethereal white skin and unique shape, is a great candidate. Many dolphins and whales could inspire the singing portion, and sightings of their unique anatomy could inspire the rest. It can be very difficult to tell what you are seeing when you look out at the waves on the open ocean. In ancient times, on small vessels, with the constant threat of the unknown, of sinking, of meeting hostile people, I can only imagine how much more difficult it would have been. In 2011, a fun little mockumentary premiered on Animal Planet called Mermaids, The Body Found. It was a piece of complete fiction and intended only to be a mildly interesting watch. But because they put the disclaimer at the end of the movie, and because people can be fairly gullible, it caused a momentary sensation, as some people actually believed that the people in the movie had found the body of a mermaid. In the mockumentary, the scientists have mysterious underwater recordings they can't identify. They then find the remains of some sort of unidentifiable creature on a beach in, I think, South Africa. This leads down a trail where they uncover, of course, a government conspiracy. But the bit I want to talk about is how they explain the evolution of mermaids. Because how on earth could you justify the evolution of something human-like that breathes water and lives in the ocean? Well, they use something called the aquatic ape hypothesis, which is a real thing, but isn't half as ridiculous as this movie made it seem. We've previously discussed on this podcast how unique the human way of moving is. We are striding bipeds who walk upright on two legs, and that's super weird. We're really the only animal that does it, and we sacrificed a lot to do it, like our ability to easily give birth. I've previously mentioned that anthropologists don't really know what the evolutionary pressure was that made it so important. There are lots of theories. One of those is called the aquatic ape hypothesis, and it isn't too bad of a theory. It proposes that hominids were evolving in an area that was either coastal or perhaps swampy or marshy. Fish and other aquatic resources are a good food source, so it was advantageous to stand upright and wade into the water to take advantage of those resources. Not unreasonable. And at one time, there were proposals that the earliest bipeds might have evolved in coastal areas of South Africa instead of the savannas of East Africa, in which case this theory really could have held some weight. Now, however, we're pretty sure bipedalism evolved on the dry savannas of East Africa, so it wouldn't have been around much water. The aquatic ape hypothesis has mostly been discarded, but I still don't find it any sillier than the seeing over tall grass theory. Now, I don't know if the producers of Mermaid the Body Found really knew what the aquatic ape theory was saying, or that it was a proposal for why humans are bipedal. Maybe they just liked the name. Either way, they took it and ran with it. The movie uses the aquatic ape hypothesis to justify how a whole branch of humans could evolve into mermaids, and honestly, it's a wild ride. If you haven't seen it, you probably should. I was both angry and entertained, and maybe that was the point. Now, I want to make it clear that the first bipedal hominids appeared only a little over 4 million years ago. The movie implies that in that same evolutionary time span, a branch of humans could become fully aquatic. That's a big no. 4 million years has barely been enough time to stand upright and go bald. Evolution is very slow. Going aquatic takes a lot longer. I mean, a lot longer. It took whales 8 million years to go from land to sea, and they were already semi-aquatic, so they were halfway there. And they still don't breathe underwater. Primate to fish is going to take a whole lot longer. And yet, some people latched onto the whole aquatic ape hypothesis means mermaids could exist thing. It hovers around the edges of the internet for the hopeful believers. And I guess, who can blame them? It's enchanting. The idea that a whole world could be down there with people just like us. What kid hasn't jumped in a pool and imagined it? Unfortunately, it's pure fantasy. But that doesn't mean there's nothing in the sea yet to be discovered. Scientists estimate that 91% of ocean species have yet to be classified, and more than 80% of our oceans are unmapped and unobserved. So if you dream of new creatures under the sea, they're definitely out there. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Cryptozoology with Dr. Daisy. For more content, follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also follow me on Facebook and YouTube, or subscribe to the blog at cryptozoologywithdrdaisy.com. I'll see you next time, and don't forget to keep exploring. After all, you never know what you might find out there.